Hey, hockey fans, this is Mike Chambers with the Denver Post, along with Ryan Boulding, a freelance writer here in the Denver area who's been helping us out this year. This is another edition of Traffic in Front of the Net. We're going to talk all things Avalanche. We're going to mix in there some college hockey stuff, leading with Cale Makar of the University of Massachusetts. We're going to begin with Gabe Landeskog, who obviously it's big news today that he's going to be back probably tomorrow. They're going to wait and see how he feels at the morning skate. So we're going to talk about Gabe. We're going to talk about Friday's huge game against the Arizona Coyotes. We're going to go into Mikko Rantanen and end with some college hockey here. I got to start with Gabe. He's only been out 3 weeks. And when the team originally said that he was going to be out, it was 4 to 6.
Yeah, we were sure he was missing the end of the regular season.
Yeah, so if he comes back, he's going to play in the last 5 regular season games, when best chance before he was only going to play in the season finale. So it's obviously great news for a team that really misses his scoring. He's got 33 goals. Just overall thoughts about his return, Ryan.
Well, I feel like this team at the start of the year was perceived as one big injury away from falling apart. And they lost, of their top three, 2 players at a pretty quick interval to each other. And they've managed to figure out a way to win without their captain. And I don't think anybody's going to challenge what he brings to the team, both in terms of scoring and leadership. And that was a big loss. And then losing Mikko Rantanen not soon thereafter. It's just been impressive that the team has managed to, I would say, win pretty handily in the games they've played without either player.
It really is weird. The Avs are 6-2-1 without Landeskog and 2-0-1 without Rantanen and Landeskog. And this is a team that at the start of the year and showed throughout the first part of the year is they couldn't get enough secondary scoring to be that really strong team.
They lived or died by that team's performance, right, with, I would say, average goaltending at the time, at the start of the year. And that was a real concern, is their secondary scoring. Will these players be able to step up in the event of an injury? And I guess when it really came down to the point where, you know, every game matters all year, but these games in particular matter more than most, they've managed to make do without them and play well. And, you know, some of that is due to Grubauer playing, I would say, pretty phenomenally, and the rest is due to guys stepping up in that secondary scoring.
I forgot to mention where we are. Obviously, you guys can hear some background noise. We're at Fun 95 again. I think this is our third podcast here. It's Streets of South Glen, where I live, and Ryan lives a couple miles away, so it's a good spot. Our friend Aaron and his family owns it. If you ever want some really, really good Vietnamese food and some great company at a terrific bar, please come to Fun 95 in Streets of South Glen. Let's go into Friday's game in general. Arizona Coyotes trail the Avs by 2 points, so it could be a 4-point game. If the Avs can win this game and go up 4 points, you know, it can't be a 3-point game. If they win in regulation, then they're going to have a 4-point lead over Arizona plus the tiebreaker. It's not going to clinch them a playoff spot, but it's going to come pretty darn close.
Right, and my understanding is the tiebreaker is head-to-head wins, and in a series where there's an odd number of games played against each other, the first home win is thrown out. So it's going to come down to whoever wins this last game. That's going to be important, and it's going to be, you know, important just points-wise. Both these teams are neck-and-neck in regulation overtime wins, so Roe is going to be a big factor here. And what you're going to want to look for is Arizona has been struggling, and they I believe won their last game, but you know, they've lost like 5 games in a row or something like that. This is a team that really isn't going to want to lie down and not fight the way, you know, Vegas, arguably that game, there was a lot of fight in Vegas, but Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't there. You know, Max Pacioretty wasn't there. I wouldn't say Vegas laid down, but Arizona's fighting for the postseason for the first time in a long time. And they're going to be a team that's going to be hard to beat, I think.
Yeah, well, the first tiebreaker is Rowe.
Yeah.
And the Avs have 34, and Arizona has 33. That's regulation or overtime wins. So basically a win not in a shootout. A shootout don't count. I think it's going to – I think having Landeskog back is really going to help. You said earlier that there's – nobody can say that it's a bad thing that he's back, even though the team has had a lot of success. But you and I both know Gabe very well. He is the right leader. He is the right captain. He's the right guy to bring in that locker room. And he's the warrior of this team. And until he retires...
Yeah, he's the heartbeat. He makes his team go. So, they're gonna need him, especially if they can make the playoffs and try and make a run. They're going to need him around. So my concern is he rushing back too soon? You know, he's back earlier than expected, like you said. We expected him at, you know, the last regular season game, if that. And now he's coming back a week earlier than the minimum recovery time we expected for an injury of that sort. So the question is he coming back too soon, and what kind of a vulnerable position does that put him in specifically?
Well, the way that he plays doesn't, I mean, he uses his shoulder a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's a separated shoulder is if it's still hurt, it's really going to hurt a guy like that. Who is his game is the power forward type, real heavy hitter. I saw him at practice today. He's shooting the puck good, and it doesn't seem like that's a problem. So, you know, maybe the injury was
less than what we thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a separated shoulder, but maybe it was just, you know, just barely on that edge of being separated. I'm not sure, but. It's going to be interesting how he plays tomorrow, right?
They're going to need him. They're going to need him and McKinnon, and you know we'll see on Rantanen with his kind of mystery injury. But you know, McKinnon had until Vegas had been kind of dry. He hadn't been really, you know, contributing. I would say maybe even contributing negatively if you look at the overtime loss to Chicago on Sunday. But you're going to need these guys to be moving into end of the season or postseason at, you know, peak performance if you can get that.
Yeah, let's talk about Rantanen. I'm saying, or I'm guessing, that it's a rib, and they thought that it was, you know, a bruised rib. Maybe it's a cracked rib now. I saw him last night after the game. I saw him walk out of the locker room today after practice. He looks fine. You said that in Finland, people are talking about a hand.
Yep.
I know for a fact that he doesn't have anything covering his hand, his left hand. So what do you think the injury is?
I mean, in that case, it's, you know, it's got to be hip or ribs the way he went into the boards in that hit in Dallas. You know, maybe it's just that abdominal muscle. That's maybe the best case scenario is a sore abdominal muscle or a bruised rib. I've never hurt my ribs. I had a buddy in high school who bruised a rib, and he said, you know, every breath he took was painful. So bruised or broken rib is something that could really impact performance.
Yeah.
You know, you have to assume that if he doesn't appear for the rest of the regular season, that he finds a way to play in the postseason just because of the importance. But, you know, the way the team's playing, I don't necessarily rush him back into any questionable situation.
Yeah, it's... For Avs fans out there that want some inside news on that, I will say that there's no bandages involved here. He's walking fine. If there is a major injury, we don't think that it's anything that can be detected from the outside. So that's why I think it's a rib injury. Again, I don't see anything on his wrists. He's walking fine. I'm not sure about the hip, but it's...
And he's a guy that regularly wears a wrist brace anyway, so You know, that's, it's not something, and you would see an overdone scenario of that if it was a wrist or a hand injury, probably.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, Ryan. I think that with they got Landeskog back, they got Matt Nieto back, they're getting some forwards back now that can really help them. And if Mikko needs another week, especially if they win tomorrow, I think that they'll slow it down for Mikko and make sure that he's at 100% next week.
You go from fighting for the postseason to planning for the postseason pretty quick, I think, with that win over Arizona. You're trying to keep Minnesota down. You're maybe trying to catch Dallas. You're trying to keep Arizona down. Unless Chicago strings together some wins, they're not really within striking distance. So there's no need to rush him as long as the team's playing the way it is.
And Minnesota's a mess.
They've been a mess for a while. I'm shocked that they're as competitively relevant as they are.
You know, I'm not a Minnesota fan, so I like saying Minnesota's a mess.
I mean, Bruce Boudreau's their coach, so you could start there. I think his days are largely numbered. But the way they kind of sold off and then were somehow still in the mix was reminiscent of St. Louis last year, where they traded Paul Stastny to Winnipeg and then suddenly found themselves competing for a playoff spot at game 82.
Okay, let's talk about prospects. Cale Makar, he's obviously Hockey East Player of the Year with the University of Massachusetts. Sophomore for the Minutemen, a complete stud, the fourth overall pick of the 2017 draft by the Avalanche.
Hobie Baker finalist.
I haven't followed college hockey that much this year, but something tells me that he's going to win that award because he's probably the biggest name in terms of, you know, Hockey East Player of the Year. He's the highest draft pick in college. He's just got such a big name, and I was on that Hobie committee for a while, and a lot of it has to do with the personality and the character of the kid. Let me tell you, this kid has excellent character, and he's a great personality. He does all the right things, so I think that's going to weigh heavily on voters, and I think he's going to win this thing.
I got to meet him at the draft the year he was drafted. That was my last year with the team. And I was impressed with the quality of his character then. I was fortunate at the time to be in on scouting meetings and things at the end of the season. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise to me that they picked him. Similar to the quality of character that Tyson Jost has, I think Cale Makar's there. They have definitely, you know, covet a certain personality type on top of a talent level. You know, you see tweets about him, going to class across campus or a meeting across campus and showing up early even though it snowed that day. And, you know, he's a very responsible kid. He's taking his time to go through college, you know, invest in the program that invested in him. I watched Bob McKenzie recently on NBC Sports kind of run down the Hobie Baker finalists, and he didn't even talk about Cale Makar because I think he's such a favorite to win, and he's so talented, and his personality, his attitude is the right attitude and personality that, you know, McKenzie didn't spend any time talking about him. Instead talked about maybe the next closest shot in that category, which I think says something about the level of player that he is now.
So Ryan, you used to work for the Avalanche, and you do the media guide and stuff like that, and you do a lot of writing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the only two Hobie Baker winners have been Chris Drury and Kevin Porter.
Yeah.
Jordan Leopold?
Well, Will Butcher won the Hobie Baker, too.
Well, he was a draft pick.
Yeah.
But he didn't play.
Right.
I forget if Jordan Leopold was a Hobie Baker.
I'd have to look to see if he was, but for sure Kevin Porter and for sure Chris Drury. Notable Hobie Bakers to me, like Matt Carl. Coming out, he obviously didn't play with Colorado, but coming out of there, but I can look it up while we're talking and see.
Okay. Well, as we know, the Hobie Baker winner doesn't always become a excellent or a longtime NHL player, just like the Heisman Trophy or any other award of that kind. But obviously, to win it as a sophomore and whatever you, I mean, Cale Makar is only 20 years old. The typical college hockey senior is 23, or at least 22. He's on the path. He's on the path for NHL stardom. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that there's a projection here that he's expected to fill. And I've been somewhat vocal on Twitter about not saying this guy will do this, because it's hard to predict human nature, and the way life goes is it's unpredictable. But I think there's a projection there for him to accomplish some great things, and, you know, him trending toward leaving the program at the end of its season to join the Avalanche is a positive thing, and I think he'll accomplish good things for the Avalanche. You were right, by the way. Jordan Leopold, for sure, won.
Okay, so that's three I know for sure. I think that's it, but certainly it's a very prestigious award.
And the way it's trending, Johnny Gaudreau won, Jack Eichel won, Jimmy Vesey won, Will Butcher won. Last year was Adam Gaudette. So in terms of players making an impact in the NHL, it's starting to trend toward that.
Yeah. Let's talk a little more college hockey. Who do you got? The upcoming NCAA tournament starts tomorrow. Speaking of that, if UMass lose tomorrow, the Avs might sign a Makar by Saturday. UMass plays Friday and Saturday. They open against Harvard. And then who else is in there? They've got Notre Dame.
In the Northeast, yeah. They got Notre Dame and Clarkson playing in the other matchup. They're also playing Friday night. Avs prospect Cam Morrison plays for Notre Dame. So you could see some Avs prospect action there in those matchups if they make it to the second round of the regionals.
Cam Morrison's a junior, right?
I believe so.
Because in 2017, he was a freshman, and he played against DU at the Frozen Four. So he's a junior now. If you can you look up his numbers real quick?
Yeah, I can try. I tried to look up his numbers against Notre Dame earlier this year, and it was tough, to say the least.
And then obviously on the college hockey local front, the University of Denver is making their 12th consecutive NCAA tournament appearance. That's six more than anybody else. The Pios have put together 18 consecutive 20-win seasons, which is a record, and their 12th consecutive NCAA tournament on a total team that we thought was rebuilding from five guys last year left early, plus a senior class. It was just a crazy exodus with a new coach, a 28-year-old head coach, and they've managed to have a pretty good season. They finished in third place in the NCHC conference tournament after finishing fourth in the regular season and sweeping North Dakota in a first-round series here. DU opens the West Regional in Fargo against Ohio State, which eliminated them last year in the Elite Eight. If DU gets past the Buckeyes, they play number one, or presumably play number one, St. Cloud State, which has a relatively easy first-round matchup against AIC. And you ask, what is AIC?
Right. They're a team that played their way into the tournament this year, which is always fun to see in that kind of scenario.
It's American International College in Massachusetts, and they play in a relatively weak conference, Atlanta Hockey. But, you know, a lot of those teams, they win that conference tournament, and they've got a lot of 23- and 24-year-old seniors, and sometimes they can be tough to beat. And I know this because I follow Air Force a lot. So is AIC another Air Force? Maybe. But St. Cloud is easily the best team in college hockey.
Yeah,
has been. Sure. The entire year, and they're going to have a good fan base up there in Fargo.
That's going to be a big game, and that one's, you know, Friday night at, I believe, 5:30 Mountain Time on ESPN3, if you get it. That's going to be a game to watch for sure. DU's playing Friday at 2 p.m. on ESPNU. I got to watch my boys, the Pios.
Hey, that's good. I just turned down an interview for NHL Network because I told them I was going to do yoga between the morning skate and the game tomorrow, but now I know that I need to watch the Pios and keep tabs on them. But what else you got, Ryan?
What else do I got? Oh, man, I don't know. I think, you know, for me, it's been impressive to see Grubauer kind of rise to the occasion. On my own podcast, I haven't maybe given him the credit he's deserved. I think he's been...
And you can plug that podcast, by the way.
Yeah, I do. So my podcast is with JJ Jerez, if you know him, Avalanche Talk. We just did a big episode about the Russian Five, which I saw you did a little quick hit on.
Yes, I did.
We had an interview with Jenny Fatarovich, I'm guessing is how you say her name. She helped produce the movie. That's the latest episode of Avalanche Talk. I actually spoke to her about the movie, which I thought was phenomenal. You know, she told me, I think, they're expecting Avs fans to kind of hate watch it because it does have to do with the Red Wings in the days of the bloody rivalry that was. But, you know, if you're a scholar of the sport or of teams or history in general, I think it's a fascinating watch. But I didn't give Grubauer a lot of credit, and I think what he's done has certainly been impressive. Lately, he's been pretty phenomenal. I think the team's playing exceptional in front of him. You know, they got out to a really quick start against Vegas. Those two goals, I think, in the first period, without those, they might not win that game. But, you know, a couple quick strikes. They scored three goals in the first period, but it really took two for Vegas to wake up and play. And I think that, you know, Grubauer deserves credit for putting the team in this position.
I've heard it from coaches for... You know, I've been covering hockey for 20-some years, and I've been writing it for 20-some years. If you're a hockey team and you don't have good goaltending, you got nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but your star forwards and great D, you got nothing if you don't have goaltending, and I think right now the Avs are in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they have it. It's, you know, it's impressive to watch, since I don't have any skin in the game either way, the other team play. You know, and you notice a lot of things. You notice desperation or inconsistency, and that's something I was watching for with Vegas. And I think at the beginning of the game they weren't ready. They were, and I all the way to the end of the game, I think they were pretty sloppy in their own zone, whether they're breaking out or, you know, exiting. I think that they have the lethal ability to tie the game there late, but it just wasn't coming together for them. And, you know, Grubauer's there for Paul Stastny's shot right at the end. And, you know, they kind of weathered a storm. But it's been interesting to watch, you know, desperate teams play against the Avs. And for me, the Avs don't really look that desperate.
We're going to end on this. Ryan and I are both affiliated with the Professional Hockey Writers Association. It's a national organization that we're very proud to be a part of. And we just released our Colorado chapter winner and national nominee for the Bill Masterton Trophy, which goes to, as most of you know, perseverance, character, sportsmanship. It's usually awarded to the guy who comes back from something like big adversity.
Yeah, it's tricky
cancer.
Because it's not exclusive to that.
Yeah.
But those are generally the guys who win.
But it's given to a good guy who has overcome a lot of adversity, and Carl Soderberg is the man. I mean, he's I think this is like the second or third time.
Definitely the second, maybe the third.
And he's just, it's hard to understand how he is such a good hockey player with one eye.
Yeah. I mean, you just went through eye surgeries and eye issues. I wear glasses.
I couldn't play hockey.
Yeah, I mean, I've been wearing glasses since the fifth grade. I couldn't play hockey without glasses on. You know, to me, the fact that he has somehow compensated his depth perception to be able to... I mean, first of all, the speed at which NHL players play hockey, there's nothing like it. You know, and you don't get a sense for it necessarily watching on TV or up in the rafters, but if you're down at glass level, like, their speed is incredible to me. And if you really want to see the difference between pros and amateur semi-pros, if you watch a college game, like last Friday I watched DU in the NCHC tournament and then watched Anaheim and San Jose play right after, it's like night and day different sport almost.
Can be, yeah.
So the fact that he has overcome being legally blind in one eye to adjust to his depth perception, that he could put up 20 points in the NHL or 50 points or a career high in goals, you know, to me that's impressive and commendable. And when you solicit votes from everybody in Colorado on the Masterton nominees, I went through the current roster and it was hard-pressed for me to find another guy.
It was even close.
That was close. And I told you, I think Agazino is up there just for what he's overcome to just score his first NHL goal.
Yeah.
And Varlamov having, you know, hip surgery or double hip surgery to come back. And I know people aren't high on him this year. He hasn't been miraculous. But to come back from that and still perform admirably, I think, is good, but still, Soderberg is the guy that stands out. And there wasn't, I don't think, any pushback from anybody else in
No, I think our
the Colorado
group was,
chapter.
Seven or eight members now, and it was pretty much unanimous that it was Carl Soderberg. You know, he doesn't have a nickname. Everybody just calls him Carl. He's kind of a boring guy. He's shy, soft-spoken, but he's a good man. He's a good family man. He's a good hockey player, and I don't think he's going to win this thing nationally.
Well, it's hard to compete against a guy like Dallas Eakins or Cody Eakins. Who is it?
Cody from Vegas?
No, from Anaheim. It's Dallas. No, Dallas is the coach. Eves, that's who it is.
Patrick Eves?
From Anaheim. Who's out almost a whole season with some weird health issue, I guess is the best way to put it. He came back and he played a handful of games with Anaheim, but I guess the original symptoms are back from him. I think he's a guy that's going to be hard to compete against. Didn't Brian Boyle win?
Brian Boyle won last year. He came back from cancer.
It's Patrick Eves.
And had a very good season with the New Jersey Devils.
He came back from leukemia.
Yeah. So that's what the award is all about, named after the former DU hockey player, Bill Masterton, who has been the only NHL player to ever die from an injury in an NHL hockey game. And he played at DU. And
it was a golden era at DU.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for us. This is Mike Chambers. This is Traffic in Front of the Net. I want to thank Ryan Boulding for participating again. I want to thank Aaron from FA 95 here in Southman. It's FA, FA.
FA.
FA 95 in Southland. Thank you. Ryan, it was good to see you again, buddy.
It's always a pleasure.